everybody. Welcome to Leadership Lessons. I'm Pastor Adam. Thanks for being with us today. We're excited to be able to do something a little bit different today and not be alone as well either. So we're going to have a little discussion today and just share with you some information that I've come across and that I think will be helpful to you in whatever capacity of leadership that you're in. And so that's the direction we're going to go today, and just share with you some new updated statistics and whatnot that are pretty mind-blowing, really. And look at those and just share the word and talk to you today a little bit of just about trying to lift the weight that we carry as leaders and how to more effectively carry that as well. So that's where we're going to go today. And back on the podcast today with me is Pastor Hinkle.
Who's that? That was my dad.
Pastor Charlie, or Pastor Donnie, rather. Pastor Charlie is your brother, but we're glad to have you back, Brother Donnie.
It's good to be back, Pastor Adam. And, you know, looking at some of this and just we're discussing off mic, you know, just about the things that pastors and leaders and people in ministry go through, it's not easy, you know, there's no even compensation sometimes to make up for some of this.
Right.
You know, sometimes you can't buy your way out of it. It's just stressful.
Yeah.
You know? Not that the other isn't good, but there's some of these things that are just stressful. And the ministry's always going to have some type of stress on it.
Sure.
Ministry's always going to have a demand. But we need to make it as easy as possible because of the high demand that's on it anyhow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely more than, it's not that we just work on Sunday, despite that
really?
what a lot of people believe. Now, I know there may be cases where that could be true, but, you know, I'm not going to get into specifics and point fingers, but, you know, I know that there's cases where some pastors don't. You know, there's some pastors that, I've told you, they message me so much and Facebook me so much, I'm thinking, how do you do anything for the kingdom, you know, but... Besides that, I know that most of the folks that I know and minister to and, you know, have a connection with, you know, they work hard and they have a lot going on. And there's an exception and always. But,
there always
you
is.
Know.
And you know, and one of these statistics, the new updated statistics we're going to share, talks about it. But even just if a pastor is just preparing for a message.
Yeah.
They don't just stand up on Sunday and work. Most pastors that I know put hours into just preparing, let alone praying.
Yeah.
And so it's not just, I know few pastors that just can just stand up and they're just preaching.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, unless they're reading it out of a book or something, it just doesn't happen. So there's a lot of work just in the delivering of it and the preparation of it.
Sure.
In addition to other ministry things.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to dive into some of this here, but just want to encourage all of you that I know many of you listen to us on Podbean. And we appreciate those of you who do, but if you came to this through the website or through social media, we just encourage you to make sure you check out our full website and see everything that's going on. And it'll provide links to everything else that you'll hear us talk about or mention and all the ministries and that. So you can do that at freshfirechurch.net.
Absolutely.
And we appreciate you stopping by, checking things out, and praying for us as we pray for you. I want to share a couple of these things, though, I'll start with, and you can jump in any of these that, like, really catch your attention, but these are the newest and updated statistics, and these are according to pastoralcare.com. It's a nice website that basically provides a lot of things for pastors and people in leadership, whether it's, they do outlines, and they do, by outlines, I mean, like, manuals for your church and guidelines for your ushers and stuff. They help to really... be a mind for the pastor and help them, you know, navigate some of the tedious things. And yet they provide a lot of good information too sometimes. And these are some of the updated ones. And some of them really just stuck out at me. And I thought, you know, I wanted to talk about them a little bit. Whether the people that listen are a leader or No, it's just good for them to have the information, you know, I feel like, and, you know, be able to, I think, be empowered, you know, but.
Well, if, you know, if a listener is not a pastor or even in leadership or whatever position they're in, if they're not in a leadership role, this is still good information to have so that you don't become this person that's doing it.
Right.
To your pastor or to your leader or whatever, your supervisor, you know, don't become this person that causes the problems. And so don't turn off your podcast. Don't say, that's not for me. This is for everyone. Either you're walking through it or you're causing it a lot of times.
Right.
So stay tuned. You're going to enjoy this.
Yes, absolutely. One of the first ones, this one didn't stick out to me as much as some of the others, but 72% of all the pastors report working between 55 and 75 hours a week. That I pretty much knew already. But you know, that's a good chunk of pastors there, 72% of us that work, you know, well over 40 hours a week. So it's well beyond that Sunday only situation. 84% of pastors feel that they're on call 24/7, you know, and that's true. I know we talked off camera, 80% believe pastoral ministry has negatively affected their families.
Yeah.
Many pastors' children do not attend church now because of what the church has done to their parents. That's true.
That's very true.
Yeah.
You know, you know, I know when I was, before I got into ministry, and I knew God called me, but I didn't want to do it.
Right.
Because I was close. My dad was a minister, but I was also very close to a lot of other ministers through our family. And so I saw what happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, no way. No. And I kept telling God, no. You know, of course, God doesn't take no for an answer sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I saw it as a kid. Yeah. You know, so I get that. That rings true for me, and I'm sure for a lot of others that, you know, your kids don't even want to be in church anymore because they've seen what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I grew up as a preacher's kid, so I know all about it. I felt the same way, you know. And before that, you know, went through my own way of rebelling for a while. But one of the ones that stuck out was me that was 78% of pastors report having their vacation and personal time interrupted with ministry duties or expectations. 78%. And I think that one there sort of bothers me. And I know, because I sort of feel the same way, that even though you're on vacation, it's like if someone passes away or there's something serious like that, you feel like it's okay to be interrupted.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I have such mixed emotions about this one because, you know, what is it then that is... How do we determine that our time or our vacation time or that time of refreshment, what then is so important that you can intrude on that? You know what I mean? Like, where do you draw the line there? And I sort of feel like, you know, if, you know, you're away on vacation and, you know, or away on something and for whatever reason and something happens, you know, isn't that okay? You know, I mean, can't it go on without you? You know, I don't know, unless there's some kind of prior specific instruction that's given, like, hey, you know, this is what you need to do. But, you know, I know what it feels like when you go away and yet there's so much going on and you feel like, well, you know, if so-and-so reaches out or whatever, then call me. We're still trying to deal lightly with ministry things while you're sitting on the beach, you know, and for pastors who have families and that, you know, that's where the children and the wives and spouses, you know, they get bitter because suddenly their time isn't, they're not as important as the church.
You know, and that's that, when you said that, that families feel that they're not as important.
Yeah.
And that should never be so.
Yeah.
You know, I, as a minister, as a leader, your first responsibility is to God, first of all. But then it's to your family.
Right.
I really believe there's a ministry in that. And yes, there are exceptions, you know, a personal friend in the church, you know, something like that. I get that. Yeah. But, you know, unless it's an absolute emergency that no one else can handle, and there is where training up other leaders in your church comes in. Because if it's an emergency or something that someone else can handle, let them.
Absolutely.
And you're not doing them any favors by jumping in and saving the day.
Yeah.
You're just enabling them that every time something goes wrong, they call you.
Right.
you know. And so the family has to have a level of importance.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have children or anything, but yet, you know, it still should be, even my life should be important.
Oh yeah.
Should have a value. You know, we even talked about this weeks ago that you know, our lives as ministers revolve around, outside of ministry also.
Right.
You know, just because, like, when we leave, sometimes we need to disconnect from ministry.
Absolutely.
And so if you're on vacation, stay on vacation.
Yeah, absolutely.
For your sake and your family's.
Absolutely.
Unless it's one of those odd things, exceptions, but I just really believe that.
Yeah.
You know, you need a Sabbath just as well as anybody else did.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I know for me, years ago, and I know you remember, that, you know, we had... You know, we were all at once, we had like a large influx of leadership here, and you know, people were in leadership or working to be in leadership, and so, and then I sort of through a growth spurt of the church, I had to put more restrictions on myself because there was only so much of me to go around, and you know, when your phone is going off at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, people want to talk for 2 hours, you know, that's not okay.
Nope.
And so I had to put like more restrictions where I, you know, I don't answer my phone before 9 a.m. or after 9 p.m. and things like that. And then we took every leader and put them on an on-call system where, you know, during the weekend they were the one on call until Sunday morning, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it helped me a lot. But it also taught them, and it really allowed me to have some allies in the church.
Now they knew what it was like.
People understood exactly what it was like. And like, you know, when you're trying to put a message together and, you know, you got people calling because they have a hangnail, you know, or whatever the case is, you know. And
by the way, this is not exaggerated. People do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, where, you know, it just helped to cultivate an atmosphere of good leadership around me and helped to cultivate an atmosphere where I had a support system, you know, so that when the people of the church didn't understand or thought, you know, I was being antisocial or I just wasn't accessible, you know, they were able to, you know, really support me in that and help people, the others to understand, and the ones that we were leading together to understand, you know, no, but I have, you know, family too, and no, or no, I need rest too, and them living and going through the same thing really was a good thing for me and the church at the time. And so I think too, as pastors and leaders, you know, we have to empower other people to be able to carry some of the weight, even if they're not fully qualified. You know, they
that's
will
how they learn.
Because that's how I learned. You know, I was sort of, you know, I use the example. You know, my dad would learn to swim, and then you know, we kind of learned to swim the same way that, you know, my grandfather took him out in the middle of the Yawk Lake. Threw him over the board and said, "You can swim or drown," and that's how my dad learned to swim.
Wow!
You know? And you know, and it's sort of—I'm not saying that's how we learn leadership because that's also how people get hurt.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm saying there are some things that, when it comes to leadership, that's the only way you're going to learn, and it's only by mistake that you learn. You know, and you know, you can't teach everyone everything. You know, we can't fully prepare every leader through seminary and Bible college for what it's really going to be like, because every person is so different.
They are.
But
and every church is different.
Absolutely. But I think that, you know, in some instances we empower people, you give them some boundaries, say, hey, if you really get stuck, this is what you can do, or this is how you can reach me. But for the most part, you empower them, you know, and then you empower them just to help teach the people to do a lot of it on their own. You know, so many times when people call for prayer, I just want to say, did you pray?
Yeah.
You know, and they haven't
true
yet, and they just want us to pray. And you know, I'm fine with that, you know, to a degree, but if you haven't prayed before you dial my number, make sure you did, because if you wake me up and you hadn't prayed through first, Lord Jesus help you. You know what I mean?
I get that. That's and I agree, you know. We need to teach people to be able to go to the Word, find the answers for themselves. You know, that's what effective leadership does. It teaches people to be able to find the answers themselves.
Yeah.
Be able to. We shouldn't try to be making clones. We should be trying to make disciples,
right,
who know how to get to God themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I get that with, you know, like you were saying about the 9 to 9 thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I try to even do that with other people, you know, unless it's an emergency. You know, even though you and I are good friends, and yet if it's not important, I don't bother you after 9 o'clock or even before 9. Now, if it's something going on or whatever, we do that. But if it's just chatting to say, hey, no way.
Right.
You know, I try not to bother you or other anybody really.
Yeah.
If it's after 9 o'clock, that's their time.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
And we all need to learn that.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
You were mentioning that about seminary,
yeah.
And I saw it on the list somewhere, and I can't remember the percentage, but a large percentage of pastors feel that the seminary did not prepare them to pastor in a church.
That's true.
And you know, what is happening in seminary?
Right.
You know, I get learning, you need to learn to study the Bible.
It's 53%.
53%, you know.
Pastors.
They don't feel that the seminary fully prepared them.
Right.
So we've missed something there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's just certain seminaries, I don't know. But if the seminary isn't preparing us, then that's where real life comes in.
Yeah.
It's where you got to learn it.
Yeah.
You know, seminary may be able to help you learn how to teach and preach.
Right.
You know, how to study maybe, but you're never going to get it until you're out in the real world.
Right.
You know.
Exactly. That is very true, very true. 90% of pastors report the ministry was completely different than what they thought it would be before they entered into the ministry.
Wow.
90%, that's a big, you know, after you say 53% believe seminary didn't even prepare them, then 90% of pastors report the ministry was completely different than what they thought it was going to be before they even entered
it. Very different.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Very different. Yeah, it's just, you know, one that really shocked me was that 95%, now that's a lot, 95% of pastors report not praying daily or regularly with their spouse.
Yikes.
95%?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, if you know math, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know? And that they're not spending that time praying with their spouse.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Yeah.
You know? And because, you know, the spouse is just as much a part of the ministry as the pastor.
Yeah.
And I know there are some ladies who are pastors. Well, yeah. You know, that their husband or their wife, whichever one, whoever's the pastor, that their spouse is just as much a part of that ministry as they are.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones every night that come home and have to listen to you gripe.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. They're the ones that have to field the calls from all the other people in the church.
Absolutely.
You know, oh, pastor didn't do this or that, you know. And so it's, you better be praying with your spouse.
Yeah.
That number needs to change now.
Yeah.
You know, that's just uncalled for. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And something has caused that to happen. The stress of ministry and stuff has caused that to happen. Just,
yeah.
You know, that's sad.
Yeah.
Sad.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely is. You know, we have to be praying with our spouse. And now, that's one of the greatest areas the enemy comes in, you know,
yes.
And you know, I know that from personal experience. And you know, you need that relationship, and you need the support system of one another, and you need to know you have a spouse that's praying for
yes.
you, not just with you.
Yes.
57% of pastors believe they do not receive a livable wage.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, duh.
You know, in most cases, unless you pastor a mega church. You know, and mega, I don't doesn't have to be 15,000, but even 20,000, or even 10,000, 1,000 even, really. If you're less than that, even less than 1,000, chances are you're probably not making what you deserve.
Right.
Just because simply the church can't afford it.
Right.
And I get that. But where's the priority?
Right.
You know, I used to work in a bookstore, a Christian bookstore, and it amazed me that people would come into our store, and you could see the boxes of the shoes they had for their kids that they would spend $100, $150 on or more on a pair of shoes. But when they walked in the bookstore, they asked for the cheapest Bible they could find.
Yeah.
You know, we want the best in everything else, so why wouldn't we want the best in our church?
Right.
You know, and so... Yeah, that's not a good number. That's way too high.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
You know, I noticed that there was another number in here that just was way too high, I thought, but 80% of pastors expect conflict. Expect it.
Yeah.
If you expect it, it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's true.
Or it's already happened.
Yeah.
You know? Church, and I get it, we're going to have differing opinions. And that's one of the jobs as a pastor, is a lot of times just being a personality manager, because everybody has their own personality.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, when we're having conflict, that tells me that that's more than just disagreeing on something. That's, you know, that's actual, I don't want to say knockdown, drag out fights, but that's where people are really having an issue with one another, and then that sows that seed.
Yeah.
And then that seed begins to grow, and we begin to distrust, and we begin to look at that other person as, well, they don't agree with me, I'm not going to agree with them. And then what happens in our worship?
Yeah.
You know, if we happen to open our eyes and look over and we see that person, our worship's interrupted.
Yeah.
You know, and Jesus said, if you come to worship, you know, and you come bringing your gift and you have aught against your brother, leave your gift, go make it right, and then come back and give it.
Right.
And so, but that's all that breeds. That breeds just such a confusion and a distrust in the body.
Yeah.
You know, but 80% of pastors expect it's going to happen.
Yeah. That's crazy. But as pastors, though, I mean, I can say that there's a lot of times I joke about, you know, that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, you know, among other pastors, you know, about what trouble we've got, or, hey, how's so-and-so, you know, knowing some of the, you know what I mean? And so, you know, maybe we help breed an atmosphere of expectation in that manner that we shouldn't. But, you know, I think it's just because we can relate to some things that, you know, we do that. But the one right below that says that 75% of pastors report spending 4 to 5 hours a week in needless meetings.
That's a low number, 4 to 5 hours a week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of needless meetings, but I think there again, you know, that's where we have to make sure that we have, you know, can't you empower somebody else to do it? I mean, is it stuff that you really have to be a part of?
Exactly.
You know, like I don't particularly love sitting in leadership meetings even. And the only reason is not that I don't want leadership to know like what's happening next or whatever, but I think there are some of those meetings that like I don't have to be a part of.
I agree.
Like, you know, why can't I, you know, meet with someone else, give them sort of an outline of what I need to see happen in that meeting and empower them to do it. Yep. Because, you know, in those meetings so often comes up, well, what do you want to do about the Christmas blah blah blah, and what color do you want us to use of this, and they're just details that I don't care about.
Absolutely.
Like, there's sometimes people are standing in front of me and they're telling me something, I'm just thinking to myself, and you think I care about this, why? You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
And it's not that I would be mean about it or I want to be mean, it's just like, you know, when I have something else on my mind or whatever, or people will say, you know, are you okay? You know, you don't look like you're feeling well. Well, probably not. I'm probably ready to, like, pull my hair out, you know? And you know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's sort of how you feel sometimes. And I think that as leaders, we have to empower other people to sort of deal with some of those needless meetings for us sometimes, you know?
I get it. I, you know, honestly, to me, I could care less what color you paint a wall.
Yeah.
You know, I could care less what color carpet.
Right.
Really, unless it's just ugly.
Right.
I really don't care.
Right.
You know, that's not a meeting I really need to be a part of.
Yeah.
You know, Peter addressed this issue in the book of Acts when there arose a dissension because there was a lack of a need being met, of feeding people. And so that's where the first deacons came into place in the book of Acts, because Peter says, why should we neglect the word so we could wait on tables?
Right.
It wasn't that the tables didn't need waited on, it's just he saw his ministry, his calling, was to provide the word.
Right.
And so that's why he said, look out among you, find these men that we can appoint.
Right.
You know, and so that's where the first deacons came to be. You know, that's the role of a deacon. Take that burden off the pastor.
Yeah.
So that the pastor can spend time in prayer and study, so that when they get up to preach, it's not, they've had plenty of time to prepare. You know,
yeah.
Somebody say, well, boy, preacher, that was just horrible message you had this morning or something. You know, now I've never been told that, but I've I think people have thought that.
Yeah,
because there's messages. Every pastor's bombed a message.
Oh, you better.
Every one of us, at least one, a month. but you know, sometimes that's the result of having your hands in too many fires.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And so that's the role of a deacon: free up your pastor so that they can do and bring the word the way God wants it, instead of just being burdened down under stress.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. Totally agree. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Every pastor, remember, every pastor bombs a message at least one a month.
Oh, yeah.
A month. Oh, yeah. It seems like it, but no. Oh, it's, yeah. It happens.
And they know it when they bomb it. Like, plus, you don't have to tell them.
You know, but some of the ones that I thought were the worst, other people respond better.
Yeah.
But there's ones that, man, I think, man, I leave there and I think, man, I nailed it. Got it good. And that's like everybody's like, oh, well, you know, it really didn't touch me.
Right.
You know? It's the ones we think are good that aren't sometimes.
Yeah. You know, but like for me, like when I went through burnout last year, I knew when I got finished that last message, I knew when I got off that platform and left this building, well, I just left like that day. Remember? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was just so in such a bad place. Walked off the platform, walked back to the hall, went straight to my office, walked out the back hall out of my office, locked the back door, got in my car, and left. Because I knew. Like, I remember it. I remember that day. And I knew I bombed. But at the same time, there was nothing I knew I could do about it. I thought, like, I didn't have anything else to give that day.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is bad. This is bad. You know, and so a lot of pastors know, you know, that they're in a bad place, you know. This one really stuck out at me. One out of every 10 pastors will actually retire as a pastor.
One out of 10? 10%?
One out of every 10 pastors. That is, you know.
Wow.
That's a scary number.
Wow.
But if we look on down, we realize that, you know, when you put that in context with 7,000 churches closed every month,
wow.
You know,
wow.
Hello, you know, being a pastor is no longer a lifetime career.
No, it's not.
You know,
no, it's not.
A lot of pastors are coming into the pastorship late in life.
True.
Because they're already retiring or have retired, and they're doing it to help a church out.
Uh-huh.
You know, not really doing it because they're called. You know, there's a lot of reasons. But yeah, one out of every 10 people like you and I who have actually used our life to be a pastor, you know.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, I got a few years left in me. I want to retire a pastor. Well, and maybe
because the retirement plan is so good.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I plan on preaching until my last breath.
Yeah.
You know, it's just because you're right, the retirement plan. But, you know, honestly, there's a gentleman in my church who used to pastor a church. And I highly respect him. And he had been in the ministry, I believe, 40 years. It's been a long time.
Right.
And just, I highly respect that. And I've told my church, you know, you got to honor people like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his health isn't the best and all. But you know what? There's times when he'll get up and preach. And everybody loves it.
Yeah.
You know? Now, he may not be able to preach every Sunday, but you know what? As long as he's around, I'll give him the opportunity.
Right. You know? Absolutely.
Because you can never really retire from ministry.
That's true.
You're always going to... If God called you, it's always going to be in you somewhere. Yeah. You know? You could be 90 years old and you still want to go and preach.
Yeah.
And go for it. If you can do it, go for it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're able to and it's in you, go for it.
Oh.
This was one that I thought was important just because of last year for me. 71% of churches have no plan for a pastor to receive a periodic sabbatical.
Wow.
And I think that's really important, you know, no matter if it's a pastor's first year, fifth year, 10th year, whatever it is, I just really think that's important that churches need to have something like that in place, you know. Take the time to put it in your bylaws, you know, and that, you know, you care enough that, I'm not talking about vacation, you know, I'm talking about an actual sabbatical, you know. At least every 2 years they get one. You know what I mean?
I agree.
They look for that. You know, I took, 6 or 8 weeks off, you know, last year. And, you know, I think that's important where there's nothing expected, you know, where you can't oust your pastor.
Yes.
That someone can't rise up and call, you know what I mean? Where their position, who they are, is secure. It's just that you care enough for their sanity and their family that they can have that time just to, you know, be nurtured themselves. I think that's really important.
Recoup, yes. Regroup and recoup.
Yeah.
You know, I know when you took the time off, that time, you, in the entire time you've been here at Fresh Fire, you haven't taken that much time total.
No.
And, you know, that's, we can't have that with pastors, because pastors are going to burn out if we don't.
Yeah.
Pastors are going to get to the point where they feel they have nothing left to give.
Right.
You know, and that's different, you're right, from a vacation.
Yeah.
You know, a vacation is a temporary patch
right.
for this. But, you know, there's a reason for Sabbath. You know, there's a reason why God rested on the seventh day. Not because he was tired.
Right.
But he set an example for us.
Yeah.
And pastors need to have that Sabbath. You know, God even established in the Old Testament the year of Jubilee. What was that? That was a Sabbath
right.
for the land. And also the slaves were set free. You know, and so pastors, we need that Jubilee.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. that time when everything gets reset.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen on a one-week vacation.
Right.
It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't quite.
No.
Not quite. I know for me growing up as a kid that my mom used to get so mad because in the rare occasion we actually went anywhere. You know, we may have been on vacation, but to actually go somewhere
yeah.
is a different story.
Yeah.
And we would go to the beach or whatever. And, you know, it would take 3 days usually just for my dad to, like, come down
uh-huh.
enough to, like, engage the family. You know, mom, me, and my sister, we'd all be, like, on the beach enjoying ourselves. And dad's, like, totally passed out in the beach house or in the hotel, you know, zoned out or whatever. Or we're ready to go do this, and he's still, like, coming down, you know. And it really took us a long wow. time to understand, and now I get it.
Yeah.
You know, being in ministry where I get done preaching, no, I don't want to go out to eat with you. Or no, I don't. You know, those are things that you don't always want to do because I need to just come down and adjust. And when you are wound so tight every day of the week, when you actually go on vacation, you kind of get that opportunity to rest, you know, and that you're not necessarily ready to mentally and physically engage with the family.
True.
And that's one of the things I know a lot of other people have told me that they've heard me talk about it and they get now. They understand, like, why the pastor's quiet after Sunday morning or that, you know, the pastor doesn't really say much at the fellowship meal, you know, whatever, because they're sort of they're coming down out of the anointing and it's a totally different experience. It's really even hard to explain, but, you know, we, by the time we would be ready to head home for vacation, dad was just sort of getting into the vacation. It was time to go again.
It's time to go.
You know, and it was sad, but,
you
know. Another one that shocked me, and then I'll have you see what else is speaking to you. The profession of pastor is near the bottom of a survey of the most respected professions, just above car salesman.
I've heard this similar. I'm not,
I want to just scream right now.
Well,
I mean, I just want to scream in the microphone. Like, oh, Lord.
Unfortunately, that's society today.
Yeah.
You know, have we had ministers that have messed up? You better believe it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
None of us are perfect, first right. of all. None of us. Not a one. But people lump everybody in that same group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know pastors that just work their heart out for the ministry.
Yeah.
And it's tough. And yet they... people feel, because they always feel like they're trying to sell them something.
Yeah.
Well, what better to sell someone than Jesus?
Right.
You know, of course, I know we're not selling, but...
Right, right.
You know,
okay.
you know, we were always on, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, yeah, it's... I told this similar, I wasn't sure the percentage, but I was sharing this with a pastor several years ago, and he got mad at me. And I said, sorry, but it's true, you know? And he was like, no, no, no. Look at the numbers.
Yeah. Trust me, I noticed it just whenever, like, you know, I'm called to the hospital, called to someone's home, and, like, you know, the pastor walks in the room and everyone scatters. You know, and not every instance, but many instances, a lot of the family will scatter and they're just sort of, like, distant, you know. And I've seen that in some of the most difficult situations where they needed me and wanted me there. But everyone was so uncomfortable by me being there, they sort of kept their distance. And You know, it's sad, but that, you know, there's so much that goes on with pastors, and everyone thinks, oh, we're heroic, or we're this, or we're that, and, you know, we're these next best things since squeezed butter, but we have a lot of personal issues ourselves,
yes.
And, you know, we get a complex, and we get insecure. You know, when you walk into a situation like that, and everyone around, like, bolts, you get insecure, you know? Or, you know, after you preach, and it sort of was like, you know, we have feelings of insecurities and inferiorities,
yes.
as well. And, you know, it causes us to, we can possibly get a complex. So I get it.
It's
Lordy.
One of these here that I was looking at, and this is something that's correctable, and all these things are really correctable, but 27% of pastors report not having anyone to turn to in the help of a crisis situation.
I believe it.
You know, and now there's a lot of pastors, even in denominations, and they don't have somebody, like, you think if someone was in a denomination, hopefully they should have other pastors that they can turn to. But in a lot of cases, whether it's denomination or not, there's almost a competitive, it's like the pastors are competing.
Yeah.
And so they can't go to that other pastor because they feel like they always got to say, oh, my church is doing great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's sad that many, that high percentage of pastors don't have anyone to turn to. That should never be. A pastor should always have another pastor, or even if it's not another pastor, someone that's been there, or someone that they can depend on,
yeah.
someone that they know isn't going to go blab everything, even if they're not in ministry, that they can trust,
yeah.
you know, that they can go to in a crisis situation.
Yeah.
You know?
I noticed it said 70% of pastors report they have a lower self-image now than when they first started.
Yeah.
Also, 70% of pastors do not have someone they consider to be a close friend.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes hand in hand there. I mean, 70% of people,
yeah.
pastors, have a lower self-image now than when they first started. It's like, wow, what is the church doing to pastors? You know.
I don't know, but it's not good. It's
Jesus.
Not good. You know, it's when you look at, there's a whole list of these, and
yeah.
We can, like, even post a link or something if,
yeah.
you know, if someone wants to see some of these, but you know, it's just, these things are correctable. This doesn't have to be this
yeah.
way.
Yeah.
You know, there should be people surrounding pastors. There should be ways to resolve conflict. There should be, you know, ways to help a pastor out of a situation. You know, there should be ways of supporting that pastor. There's ways to correct every single one of these.
Yeah.
It's not a hopeless cause. And there have been some successes.
Yeah.
I was looking here that some improvements that have been made. 73% of churches, it says, are treating their pastors better. Now, I don't know, considering some of those other numbers, it doesn't seem like it, but according to this, they are treating them better. This thing here says that this statistic has improved due to the advent of clergy appreciation, better education on the role of the pastor, and denominational awareness of better supporting their pastors. So that's a good thing. I'm glad to see that. 77% of pastors, especially millennial pastors, which are born between 78 and 90, are spending 20 or more hours a week with their family.
Wow.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
So maybe the younger ones are getting it.
Yeah.
You know, I know even for my dad, you know, I do ministry different than my dad did.
Oh, yeah.
You know, old school, you know, it was different than how we do it. And I know some of the younger ones coming up, they're going to do it differently.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's good to see some improvements. Another improvement is 90% of pastors feel they are called and in the place where God has called them.
Okay.
So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
You know, if you can function better as a pastor if you believe God called you there.
Yeah.
If you doubt at all that God put you there, anytime a trouble arises, you're going to be tempted to run.
Right.
You're going to want to get out because it's not your fight.
Right.
If God didn't call you there, it's no longer your fight. And so, you know, it's very important that people just, you know, that they see this, that, you know, a pastor, you better be called to the church you're at. It's not a job. You know, Jesus talks about it as a hireling. You're not a hireling.
Right.
If you were not called there, if you were not sent there by God, then you're going to experience more problems than not.
Right.
And any problem that arises, you are going to run, you are going to disconnect from it because it's not your baby.
Yeah.
So if you, but if you feel you are called there, you're going to stick and fight it out.
Yeah.
You're, and I won't say fight isn't that thing, but you know, you're gonna push to change.
Yeah.
Whether it be yourself or things in the church, you're going to really push to have that change.
Right.
If you feel you're called there.
Yeah.
You're vested in that ministry now. So that's very important. It's good to see that some of those things are changing.
Yeah.
Well, these statistics, like I said, we'll post a link. Just, I encourage, if you're in leadership of any kind, check them out. But also, even if you're not, take a look at these statistics and listen to what we've said today, and develop a plan. Find out a way that you can help your pastor.
Yes.
If you're listening to this today and you say, you know, you're just appalled by some of these numbers, get together with some people at your church and develop a plan how you can improve this, how to make your pastor's job less stressful, how to make sure that your pastor is taking time off.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to demand it, hey, pastor, today's your day off. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to call you. I'm going to make sure other people don't either.
Right.
You know,
right.
So be an effective change. And if this is your church, and, you know, hopefully no church has all these problems.
Yeah, really.
But every church will have at least one of these, most likely. Try to change it.
Yeah.
Try to be an effective change. Even if you're not the pastor, if you're just someone in church that has a care and a concern and a love for your pastor,
yeah,
do something to make it better for them.
Absolutely.
You know, October comes up, clergy appreciation. Do something for your pastor.
Yeah.
You know, just even saying thank you for what you do.
Yeah.
Goes a long way. Now, of course, there's a lot of other things that can be done, but you know, with that coming up, you know, that's, now's the time. You know, it's this end of August, beginning of September now. You know, you've got time, you've got a month,
yeah,
to think of something, get together with some people, show your pastor how much you really care about him. Do something to make your pastor make your pastor's job less stressful.
Absolutely.
Less problem. As few problems you can hand their way, good.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
I'm very thankful. My church, I'm very thankful that, like, when it snows, and we get a lot of snow in Garrett County,
yeah,
but I don't have to worry about shoveling the sidewalk.
Right.
There's a guy in my church, when I get there, he's already taken care of it. You know, and I'm so appreciative of him, and I try to tell him as often as I can how appreciative I am of him doing that. He's there an hour or two ahead of time. He makes the coffee, and you know, he makes sure if things need done or whatever, he's on it.
Yeah.
You know, that's a good way to just free up your pastor so they can focus on ministry.
Yeah.
You know, find what you can do and do it.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to end it there for today.
That works.
And, you know, there's a lot we could say and a lot of directions we could go with this, but I think it's just really important that for pastors and leaders that, you know, we all have someone that we can reach out to, talk to, you know, we have a relationship with, whether it's in your denomination or you have a party with another fellowship like we are, and, you know, that you have someone that you can reach out to. You know, this year has been an odd year for us, for our fellowship. We haven't even done any workshops or any of that because of our move and, you know, my focus. And that's, you know, all on me, I know. But it is important to be a part of a fellowship that, you know, we can reach out to, you know, and be connected to and bounce our frustrations off of and, you know, say, hey, I feel like I want to quit, even though we, you know, no one's going to let you quit. But, you know, you're telling someone who, you know, believes in you, you know,
yes.
And
yes,
and we all need that, and so
we do,
and that's really important. But we are glad that all of you took the time to listen and be a part of Leadership Lessons. While we didn't necessarily teach or anything today on the podcast, I wanted to share with you these statistics because they were mind-blowing and surprising in a lot of ways. But the full list of them we'll put on the website for you, as well as you can find them at pastoralcare.com, and I'm sure they'd be a help to you. But that's pastoralcare.com, or look on our website at freshfirechurch.net. But thank you, Pastor, for joining us again
today.
Thank
you, Pastor.
Appreciate it. We appreciate all of you for listening and being a part. And if you know someone this would, you know, someone who'd be curious and interested in this or any of the other podcasts, be sure to share it with them. Let them know it's here and share it on their social media page. And we appreciate that.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you for listening. So we'll see you again very soon next time. And we look forward to recording another one very soon for all of you. So thank you again, Pastor Donnie. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening. Until next time, we pray the fire of God consumes your life. Bye, friends. Mm-hmm.